Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Route, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. And it's Monday, Hank Vogler. And I am not fooling you, Hank Vogler. We got enough foolery taking place in D.C. I figured we didn't need to try to play foolery here on the air, Hank.
April Fools.
Didn't fool me.
It's certainly appropriate for Washington, D.C., but
yeah.
Trent, over the years, I have given you so many opportunities to hit a lick. I mean, to have your ship come in, and I've got one today that's going to be the best of the best of the best. There's going to be franchise after franchise after franchise for sale in California.
Is this better than right up everybody in China increasing lamb consumption by a half a pound a person per year?
Well, it's up there with the good stuff. Yep. So anyhow, I learned this many years ago when I was on the freeway that comes out of Calexico, Mexico, shipping yep. lambs. Yep. And it was just about this time of day, it's just barely breaking day. Hundreds, maybe not hundreds, but darn sure dozens after dozens of these green school buses were coming out of Mexico. Dozens of them. And they were all there to work in the fields, work in the stores, work in whatever. But at night, they'd go back into Mexico because it was cheaper to live there. Those people were not fools. So do the same thing. Nevada border, all the interstates run through Nevada, whether it's 10 or 15 or whatever. Load up. Get a McDonald's, a Domino's Pizza, a Burger King, a Wendy's, all of them. And have Jimmy Jack Johnson's food court. Get two or three different gas stations. Because I'm telling you, $20 an hour just went in, goes into effect today. I would hate to be some young person just getting started in life and just moving, you know, into the new world. And all of a sudden, the boss just came in and said, we're replacing you with this AI machine because we can't afford unless we sell Happy Meals for $50 a piece. We can't pay you. So have a nice day. I mean, there's going to be people that will drive across the border into Nevada to buy gas. It's already a buck and a half higher in California. Mm-hmm. And now Burger King and everything like that, they've about trashed all the wool guys, all the sheep growers down there they've raised those guys. I think they get like $4,000 and all the bennies and food and you name it. I mean, they're going to absolutely vacate California. Unless you're a drug dealer, I guess. This is just completely anti-capitalism.
So what you left out of the equation is that today California has a new wage going into place, the minimum wage at $20 an hour.
Yep, that's the one.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be cheaper everywhere to be just across the border.
Mm-hmm. This can't bode well. Well, actually, it doesn't really matter because they're going to also make combustion engines illegal. So nobody will be able to afford to get to work. So it's just completely destroying the workforce, period.
And I don't know who their economic advisors are, but, you know, let's move that same equation to Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
You go in to talk to banker Tuffernall. You look him right in the eye, and you're going to tell him a Wild West story anyhow. But you start laying out what you're going to pay for fertilizer, what you're going to pay for herbicides, how much it's going to cost you for seed, how much it's going to cost you for fuel, all your expenses. And then if things are a little tight and the price of corn is down a little bit, you may have to look him in the eye and tell him, and I'm going to get 500 bushels per acre. course, he's not going to believe you any more than poor old Donnie back in New York. You know, that's why they have appraisers that work for banks that somehow adjust those giant figures. Sometimes you know, because you're gambling anyhow. You can't predict the weather. You can't predict what the prices are going to be that fall. And so you do your best to come up with something reasonable. And the banker is either going to say yay or nay. We're going to loan you the money, Trent. Get out there and plant that corn. Or, hey, cowboy, unless you got a sock full of money somewhere, we're only going to loan you a third of that money. And that's where the fan and the caca comes together with all economic situations. It has to at least start off looking like something that's going to work. And this, I cannot see anybody that says this is going to work.
Let's back up a couple of minutes. This was all premised upon me and my ship coming in. How exactly am I going to reap the rewards of California having a $20 an hour minimum wage minimum?
When you loan me your millions that you've got under the bed so I can open up these Jimmy Jack Johnson's food courts along the border. And then you'll do all the work and loan me all the money, and then I'll count it. You kind of get my drift here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a money maker.
I do have a mineral under my bed, but you have the wrong thing if you think it's cash. It's more relevant to lead. That's the mineral under my bed.
Uh-oh. Now, that's not even nice, even though it is April Fool's. I mean, what a more appropriate day for them to start that $20 an hour minimum wage.
I know. You know,
my older daughters worked at the Dairy Queen in Burns, Oregon, and for Charlie Nimzik. And they had in those days, it was competitive. Those kids had to work really hard just to keep their job because there's a dozen teenage kids wanting the same job. Well, I don't think you can hire a kid anymore. They got to be 25 and have their comfort peacock with them to hire them. There is nothing about this. No, I mean, that makes any sense, but somebody is promoting this as a giant welfare program, I guess. I don't know. Doesn't make any sense.
Did you know that last week they held a Black Mayor's Conference on Crime? What would happen in the United States if we held a White Mayor's Conference on Crime?
Oh, boy, the streets would be full of people protesting. You think they got it twisted around about the Palestinians. You do that. Yeah. The same argument. I don't think that there's whole patrols of policemen circling your house in Loop City. But if it's a high crime area, whether it's Black folks, Hispanics, or anybody else that's in the ghetto, nobody reads history. The ghettos have always been a place of crime. Mm-hmm. People are desperate for revenues or whatever. And if they come here illegally and their credit card that they give them with all the money on it burns out, you either got to get a job, which that may be difficult because the competition's got to be fierce for that. You got to be working off the grid and under the table so you're not going to pay taxes, all of those crazy things. But ghettos have historically always been where the police hang out because that's where the crime is being committed. Now, one thing with electric cars, they can at least drive over to the more wealthy parts of town and rob them too. So we're getting equality here. We're getting equality.
And this is not April Fool's either, but the mayor of St. Louis actually said in this Black Mayor's Conference on Crime that the majority of crime in the city resides around gas stations and convenience stores, and it's time that the owners of these establishments step up and are accountable to the crime they're allowing to happen. I am not kidding you. Well, that's what she said.
I think that's the Second Amendment, isn't it?
Somebody it kind of comes back to that mineral under my bed, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, okay, we can take care of this. And You okay. Walk up to the, grab the door at the gas station, and there's a couple of bodies laying there. You're probably not going to, you're going to put the pistol back in your shirt. You'll probably take the air out of that one. Go somewhere else.
Hey, Vogler, Trent Loose, Rural Routes. We have not talked about lamb consumption on Easter. We'll do that when we return with more. Speaking of Easter, have you checked out Greg Hager, greghager.com? His Songs of Christian and Country Roots will put this nation back in boots. Get more details about Greg Hager, how you can buy his merchandise, how you can organize an event that Greg will come and sing at, and Greg and Andrea will set it up. They'll light it up. More details about all of that, or just buy an album, or check out his tour schedule. It's all right there. GregHager.com. Oh, and I posted a video on my Substack, TrentLoose.substack.com. Welcome back, Rural Route, Trent Loose, alongside Hank Vogler. Here's what we had for Easter, and that was my in-laws and some friends and the daughters. It was an absolutely fantastic celebration, and a celebration we did not lose the reason for the season. It was the resurrection of Jesus to save our sins, and we cooked brisket, ham, and lamb, and I had about a, I don't know, might have been a 3-pound, counting the bone, 3-pound ham, or excuse me, 3-pound lamb roast in my freezer. I cooked it on my pellet grill for about 4.5 hours. In the temperature was about 145, Hank, and I had people sitting around my table saying, I've never had lamb before. Man, this is really good. I continually get that.
Well, you know, and I keep saying it, but the old joke about if you want to hide something from a modern housewife, put it in the oven, she'll never look there. I mean, just think about it. Mom is working to pay the car payment and to pay the house payment. The old man's working for that. Everybody's working two jobs. The kid's got a paper out just trying to stay even with inflation. So somebody gets on the cell phone at 5:01 and says, I'm bushed. Stop by Domino's, stop by whatever convenience fast food restaurant and bring something home. And that's what people are living on. Well, now, thank God we've priced them out of that. They're not going to be able to go to that. So maybe they'll start consuming lamb and get back to cooking. Look what they did during COVID. Lamb consumption went up. All kinds of food things went up because people were experimenting.
But lamb consumption went up from 0.5 pound per person per year to a pound a person per year. I look back throughout the history of the United States. In 1960, lamb consumption was 4.6 pounds per year. It's now just barely above 1 pound per year in the United States. But globally, it's still only at 5 pounds per year. Lamb consumption continues to pale in comparison to what it should. I don't understand this, Hank.
Well, you also have to take in the fact that in the United States and around the world, we're going to see the same attrition with beef, with other products, because that's what happened, as I can see it. People just were complacent. If you were a purveyor of lamb meat from a slaughterhouse or whatever, you had your regular customers. When was the last time anywhere other than maybe over the meat counter in the grocery store did you see anything that promoted lamb? You know, they just were complacent with it. It was something, it's like wool. 8,000 years ago, even before that, sheep were domesticated. Their hides were used for clothing, the wool off of them. They started weaving. In fact, Babylon, you know what Babylon translates? I think the land of wool or wool land or something like that. That's Babylon. It was king all of those years. And if you could afford it, you had fried chicken on Sunday, but you also ate beef. But the people in the ghettos, you know, the Irish, St. Paddy's Day. Well, A lot of the places where they bought their corned beef were Jewish tradesmen, because Jewish did not eat that ham on Easter or Christmas, but they produced corned beef, and it was cheap meat. Lamb was a poor man's meat. And then as you got away from it, you moved uptown. You wanted to be at the club with Biff and Buffy and Brad and Arthur or whatever. I mean, it was just a poor man's meat, I think. Goat the same way. Goat's delicious. There's nothing wrong with goat. But when is the last time you saw a goat in the grocery store? You have to practically go to a specialty shop to get goat. It's good. There's nothing wrong with it.
In 1960, our per capita consumption in the United States was 70 pounds of lamb, 67 pounds of pork, 26 pounds of chicken, 4.3 pounds of lamb. Today, we're nearly 100 pounds. I think we're just over, 100 pounds of chicken. Beef continues to be second at about 60. Pork hangs in there at 50-something. Lamb's at 1. Seafood's at 17. Seafood's been the big gain.
Yeah, well, and has it beef and chickens flipped? There wasn't beef ahead of chicken for a long time.
Well, until the 80s.
Well, and then what happened? We had all these people that used the premise in nutrition. Okay, we're eating beef, so that's got to be bad for you because we're dying of heart attacks. Of course, we're smoking 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And et cetera, et cetera. Our lifestyle has become extremely sedentary, but I'm going to prove, because I'm going to write my thesis on nutrition, that beef is bad for you. Well, now we got the environmentalists out there. Hey, we got her made now. The environmentalists, it's all beef's fault. It's all cattle's fault. It's all everything. You know, buffalo, all 60 million of them, when they were on the Nebraska prairie, they peed rose water and there was no flatulence or burping, you know. I mean, but people buy into this stuff. People buy into the fact that the world is warming up. Well, I'll tell you what, it's been raining, snowing, sleeting, hailing. We're hung up. We can't move our camps. We're going to try and go move them today and tomorrow with tractors. The roads are so muddy around here, it's unbelievable. And if that's global warming, we're going to have a chance at an excellent grass year. So I'm all for global warming. I've got under my bed, I've got sacks full of macadamia nut seed and pineapple nut seed, pineapple plant seed. I'm going to hit a home run raising macadamia nuts and pineapple here in White Pine County at 6,500 feet. Is that global warming? And the ice caps will melt. There'll be more evaporation. There'll be more rainfall. It'll be warmer, and we'll all live happily ever after. So lock and load. Let's go.
I just looked it up. The per capita consumption of bison is actually the same as lamb, 1 pound a year.
Yeah. And I think that's come up quite a bit.
Oh, I'm sure.
And now they've got elk. You can get elk. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's just, you know,
264 pounds per person per year of meat and seafood. But when you were a kid, didn't you eat more fish than you eat now?
Yeah, when the smelt were running, we ate smelt for several days. People from the Oregon coast would come over in the fall and hunt birds on my grandpa's ranch, and they would always bring us salmon. We ate so much salmon when we were kids, I got to where I can't even look at it. I like steelhead, but we ate lots of salmon. Went fishing. Bluegills were good. Bass were good. Trout, you had to get them when the water was cold, because then they tasted kind of muddy later on. So, yeah.
See, I grew up with a grandfather that loved to take me fishing, and a grandfather who ultimately became a professional fisherman and fished catfish on the Mississippi River. So We had more fish than I eat now, but we'd have a fish fry every so often too as a family gathering, and the entire community would come over. But those things don't happen anymore.
Yeah.
Every time that happens in my house, I'm serving lamb. And I had one guy one day who was a neighbor, I won't name him. He was eating lamb. And we were talking about lamb consumption, and he said, "I never had lamb I like." I said, how's that what you're... This is what beef ought to be like right here. Like, Roger, you're eating lamb.
Yep, yep. Happens all the time, you know. Or when you've got a... when you've butchered a long yearling because she failed to conceive, and you cut her up for meat, she's technically, theoretically, whatever, a mutton. And they're going, "Well, I'll eat lamb. That's all right. But boy, you keep that mutton away from me."
I had that in World War II, and I don't want any more of it.
Yeah. And just think about that. Wool was a war material.
Yeah.
All they butchered was old dyers. They didn't butcher the prime fleeces or anything like that. So, I mean, yeah, that's what they got. That's what they had. And on a ship, can you imagine on a troop ship, and the cook back there, you think he was absolutely taking the temperature and checking everything, or just tons of meat or whatever they had just rolling by, you know?
Yeah. Roll route, second half, rolling by after this. Continuing to keep you in the business of maintaining the pest in your fields, Apache Sprayer Technology, made possible by Simpson Farm Enterprises, gets it done. SimpsonFarm.com, based in Hays, Kansas, but all throughout the southern Great Plains, including Colorado. Details at SimpsonFarm.com. Keep track of the upcoming events. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Hank Vogler. I think we've covered the meat consumption. I have a friend in White Pine County, Nevada, that keeps me in tune with what's going on. And you've been talking about this 70,000 acres being confiscated by unreliable, unaffordable electric generation. Apparently that's moved on. Is that on hold? What's going on with that, Hank?
Well, there's several things, which you can't blame people when they start to do this, because there's mining claims all over the country. The first thing they do is put a moratorium on filing any mining claims in the area, because obviously if they're going to change this to another use, you're going to have to, probably do some mitigation, obviously with the people that it's their range. For their under livestock, but you'd also, if there's mining claims and things in there. So that's the first thing they did. We have, I believe it was the first and the largest federal land wind farm in South Spring Valley, not too far from my house, that was affectionately named Uncle Harry's Cuisinart Farm, because if you ground up an eagle, it was $1 million fine, but somehow miraculously they got it to where, well, you could grind up one once in a while, providing, you know, you had Uncle Harry in your pocket. But anyhow, just stuff like that. They keep telling me that this thing is, it's about run its lifespan, and people, I can't find anybody that says that it's ever produced a 1 kilowatt of electricity beyond what it costs to run the darn thing. Because once they started it, they had to guarantee the power. And if the wind didn't blow, they had to buy power from the darned old coal and natural gas and nuclear or whatever. So that's about to go away, because the subsidy is front-loaded. It's about to stop. Well, now they want, if you look at a map of Nevada, it absolutely astonishes you. There, we are the absolutely going to be the graveyard of these electrical in the sky deals. They've got thousands and thousands of acres laid aside. And of course, the people in the towns are going, "Hey, yeah, baby, let's get her done. Boy, there'll be money rolling in here." Yes, Yes, it will be the circus coming to town. But in 2 or 3 years, when they get all this stuff built, we get a change of administration and things don't work out the way they thought they ought to, we wind up, when the circus leaves town, with giant piles of elephant dung. Property values will crash. Businesses will go away. I mean, this is no different than the gold rush of the 1800s. Boom towns. Hamilton was at 10,000 feet, not too far from Ely. It was once considered a place that would be the state capital because it was huge. But the gold or the silver, whatever they're digging, played out. Everybody packed up and left town. And that's what they're going to do to us. And we're going to be stuck with all these pie-in-the-sky electrical generation projects, which are here's a perfect example. All right, we have been waiting for the shears. They're stuck over at Mr. Biggs. It's called the Little Sheep Company, but he has too many sheep, so I renamed him Mr. Big. And they can't move because the sheep are wet, and so we're next in line. Well, we can't move our camps because it is so absolutely muddy here. So yesterday I was looking for a new route, and I'm on the board with this deal. I've got a solar-powered well, and it also has a plug-in. So if it doesn't pump enough water, you can plug in a generator. But nonetheless, I drove by that. And I said, oh, gosh, that thing must be covered with snow, the panels. Something's wrong. Because it was just barely dribbling a little water out of it. Well, with all the cloud cover and everything, it was 10 o'clock when I went by it, and it's not pumping any water. Well, it's the same thing with all of these projects. You got to supplement them with coal-fired electricity. Someday it might work, but it is not working now. And the present administration is trying to shove that down Nevada's throat because they look at Nevada as not having any value, which ironically is the same thing when Nevada became a state. Mm-hmm. They didn't take their state lands. They didn't take their school lands because they didn't figure it'd make enough money to administer those properties. And now here we are getting stuck with all this stuff. And yes, it will be fun, fun, fun. Ely will boom for 2 or 3 years and then crash.
So Thursday, I went to a USDA roundtable hosted by Secretary of Ag Tom Vilsack. Amazingly, they let me come, Hank, because the last time I had a conversation with Tom Vilsack was in an interview. And he hung up on me. And for those who may not know, he's Secretary of Agriculture. He's the second longest term Secretary of Agriculture. He's in his 12th year as the Secretary of Agriculture of the past 16. And he had what it was called a roundtable, and he's got his whiteboard. And his whiteboard is where he goes and writes all of these programs that you're just talking about. That's not just happening in Nevada. It's happening in every state, USA, private land, deeded land, federal land, public land, doesn't matter. And so first question I had was that 40% of the U.S. farm debt is with farm credit. And there's a major storm brewing in Alabama with Alabama Farm Credit. And there's an individual, Dustin Kittle, who I had on the air last week, who has filed a lawsuit against President Biden because he has not seated people on an oversight committee of the farm credit system. Not one. He hasn't seated one person. And I said, Tom, this is a derelict of duty. Yes, we have informed the president of the White House of this, and he needs to get on it. But you have to understand that the vetting process takes some time. Tom, he's in his third and a half year as president. It's been nearly 4 years. How much time does it take to get the right people vetted and in place? You were in place the first week. Why? Where was your vetting process? So that was nonsense. And then I asked him the question, because if you look at all of the data, we are at a debt to GDP ratio that's right now comparable to World War II. We have a debt that it just continues to go through the roof. And I said, we have $103,000 of debt per person, including every infant born today. I spent a lot of time, Tom, talking to farmers that were born from 1910 to 1940. And they all went out of, for those that did not survive and went out of business, they had a common denominator. They could not service the debt that they had. How are we as the United States any different than those farmers? He actually told me, I'll send it to you when we get done here, Hank. He actually told me, well, we've done a good job in this administration by reducing the debt of the United States by $1 trillion. Where does that where does that show up? You can look at our debt. It is now at nearly right at $35 trillion. Where do you say that we reduced our debt by $1 trillion? And then it goes on to tell me that we have lost 155 million acres of farmland in a lifetime. And he said, I don't know about you, but I'm not happy with that. This is the very guy who stood in front of a group of people for an hour and a half and talked about removing farmland and putting up solar panels and wind turbines to generate unreliable, unaffordable electricity, and then tells me, and he, by the way, championed 30 by 30, which point blank says that we're going to remove 30% of the land from food production and 30% of the water from its natural state or return it to its natural state. He is the problem. And yet he stood right there and lies to people. And if you don't understand how the lies are coming out of his mouth, you run off and say, oh, look, we're going to create a diversity of income for these farmers and ranchers around the country. Lie, lie, lie.
Well, and the reason they say they've reduced the debt is the Federal Reserve is buying the very bonds that they're writing on toilet paper. And taking them out of one pocket and putting the other and say, like magic, okay, we're out. Well, there's the debt retired. Are you kidding me? I mean, you couldn't get a third grader learning how to do 2 and 2 is 4, even though now you can say it's 6, and the teacher will say, that's fine, Johnny, not a problem. That's what you think it is. That's what it is. I mean,
that's not funny. That is not funny.
No, it's not. It's exactly what's going on. And the amazing thing is, I guess that's why the fentanyl and the marijuana and all the drugs are coming in. You got half of a society that is smoked up on dope. They don't even know what day it is and could care less, as long as the Mexican cartels can bring in the drugs or something.
I agree. That's the core of the problem.
There is no way that this can continue.
Well, there's two problems. The illegal drugs that come into the country and the fact that the convenience store and gas station owners just allow themselves to be robbed. Those are the two problems we have in our society.
Okay.
Did you see the clip from the Santa Rosa, Florida Sheriff Johnson?
Okay. I did not.
I got two things to see. You got two homework assignments. Sheriff Johnson, who apparently held a press conference talking about a lady who was not coming forward but had shot somebody who intruded into her house. He said, I don't understand why you're not coming forward. We encourage this activity. In fact, we have classes on gun safety every Saturday. We'd like to help you become more accurate so that the next time you have an intruder, you can save the taxpayers some money. I am not kidding you. He said that in a press conference.
That guy's presidential material.
He is.
It has always been that way, protecting your home and hearth. And that's partly what the Second Amendment was in there. And most of that was the Federalist Papers was to keep you from an overbearing government of taking it away without due process. I mean, all of these things, you know, the people that put together our Constitution, they were historians. They went back to the beginning of time and the nature of the human species. People came here for religious freedom from all over to be able to practice their own religion and to own land and to have equality with the rule of law. Now, somewhere along the way, we've stumbled.
Yeah.
We have completely stumbled.
And they paid the price. There was a sacrifice to make that happen. It's time for us to make the same sacrifice. We're back with the last segment of Roll Rod. Hank Vogel, Trent Luce after this. this. Hank, we got to remind people about the most essential element of healthy living, and that is nitric oxide. NO2U.com. NO, number nitric oxide. Number two, letter U. Trent is your coupon code. By the way, I kind of screwed that up. Let's do it over. NO2, number two, letter U.com. Trent is your coupon code. Get more details and pay no shipping. Welcome back. Roll Route. Trent Luce alongside Hank Vogler. I haven't gotten a note that my farm credit loans are being pulled yet, but I'm going to continue to make it known that there's a problem in the farm credit system in Alabama. And I now have learned that Verizon, the telephone provider, has a $380 million loan through farm credit. There's a farm entity for you.
Well, look what they've done to the price of land. People have gone out to buy land as an investment, and land is a commodity. And if you're buying it for an investment, it has a certain value for what it produces, and the rest of it's blue sky. Yep. Well, when the blue sky gets too high, it tips over. You know, its value is what walks across the scales or what gets in the truck to go to the elevator. That's what the value of it is. The rest is blue sky. Same thing happened in the 80s. The farm credit system out here in the West, they got the loaning money for housing developments, all kinds of things, because of that interest rate, total greed, that there'd never be another dark day. Well, every once in a while, there's a dark day, even with real estate, and down she came. I made a settlement with the Federal Land Bank in Redmond, Oregon, stopped by, just walked in and said, where do I sign to turn this piece of property back over to you? It's about to go into Malheur Lake. Oh, no, we don't want any property. And I said, well, what would you settle? I owed him $79,000 and gave him $25,000 cash for the deed. So, you know, opportunity. I'm telling you, my gas station, my food court on the Nevada-California border is going to be a barn burner. People will figure it out. When the old gas tank is down to its last quarter, you run over to Nevada, get a tank full of gas, and get something to eat, and go back to the ghetto is what it amounts to, or going to be.
Well, look what's happening just outside of Reno, between Reno and Fernley, where that used to be just mountains coming into Reno. And Sparks come into Sparks, and now you have a whole big development center of distribution because California did not want trucks coming in a long time ago. So it created that whole economic activity there that's just mind-boggling because it had been like 5 years since I'd been there.
It's the same way in Las Vegas. There's warehouses going up. They're now up over Apex, which is coming in on I-15 from the north. They're digging out there by the Love Station, gas station, doing something out there. And when you turn and drop down into that valley, you can't see across it. But here are just all these huge warehouse complexes. Well, when you run that can of beans across at the Piggly Wiggly in downtown Los Angeles, that computer kicks back all the way to Nevada and said, you better get another can of beans lined up.
Yeah.
Trent Luce bought a can here today. And so at night, because of the inventory taxes and everything, that truck is full and it's headed for Los Angeles. But if anything trips up, an earthquake, any kind of a disruption, they only got about 4 days of food in California because they've driven all the warehousing out of California. And it started years ago and is only accelerated. So yeah, welcome to the party, boys and girls, but you can't have it both ways. You cannot have the land of milk and honey and then destroy the people that are creating the milk and the honey.
So we referenced this last week, but I have more details. And in fact, Trent on the Loose today, I would encourage people to watch at 3 o'clock on Beck.news. But Christine Anderson joins me from Oregon. We referenced how Oregon is trying to put all small farmers out of business. And I went and read the 57-page regulation. Hank, if ODA, Oregon Department of Agriculture, gets its way, if you have one animal, if you have one egg-laying chicken that's in a facility of any type with a floor, whether that be cement, gravel, particle board, any type of floor that is not earth, you are required to get a permit and be a CAFO, concentrated animal feeding operation. Normally, we think about CAFOs as having 1,000 animal units. So there was a group of four dairy women. I think they're all four women, and they have a combined 12 cows between them. They filed a lawsuit in January against the Oregon Department of Agriculture. And last week, the Oregon Department of Agriculture said, okay, we are going to roll back our permitting regulations for the dairy. So if you're collecting an egg, or you got a sow in a farrowing crate, just one sow, apparently you're still subject to these rules. But at some point, it's no different than your California minimum wage standard. At some point, this balloon is going to bust because it'll only handle so much water or air in it.
Well, and Trent, no matter who gets elected in November, I cannot see the chickens coming home to roost in 25, if not before. We may not be able to keep all the balls in the air between now and then, but historically, during election years, all the politicians like to throw money on the fire to, you know, make everybody have this euphoric feeling that the world is good. But then the year after that, you know, I think Hoover was elected in 28. The crash was in 29. And then there was this period of doldrums. And then Franklin Delano Roosevelt got elected in 32. And the bottom fell out of everything because they raised taxes, they restricted imports, and they raised the interest rate. Absolutely the opposite of what they should have done at all times. But anyhow.
And started giving these, money away like a drunken sailor through subsidy programs and the Agricultural Adjustment Act.
Yep. Yeah. And then, I mean, all these echoes from that period of time are coming back now.
Absolutely.
They may not sound the same, but they're, I mean, it's mind-boggling that everybody is whistling past the graveyard. And I, if we make it through this year without having the beginning of a real reset, a real 1980 style or 1929 style issue, I'll be surprised. But always the year after the election is a tough one. And so if you're not ready in 2025, I'd be packing my bags for some friendly country like Uzbekistan or Afghanistan or someplace like that where you can have freedom again. I don't know. It's just nuts.
Yeah, I don't think 29 or anything in the 80s parallel what 25 looks like. It's more like 1860 is a little closer.
Okay. This very morning, my friend from Burns, my accountant, my childhood friend, my hunting buddy, when his mom passed away, she had, because they took the gold away from people.
Mm-hmm. No, by the way, that was Roosevelt too. He stopped all gold mining.
Yes. Yes. Well, and that's what happened. Nixon took that away
because standard.
They could smuggle that gold. Yeah, they could smuggle that gold into Mexico and get $75 an ounce for it out of this country. Then you could only get 35 if the government bought it. So yeah, it's capitalism is capitalism. But anyhow, she had a mounted because you could keep a certain amount of gold as long as jewelry. Well, she had a 1900 gold dollar, $20 gold piece, and it had a necklace on it and everything. Well, all right, I saw on TV that they were selling that very same product in mint condition for about $3,500.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what we've done each and every time? What you could buy with a $20 gold piece in 1900, how close would it be to cost you $3,500 today? So we just keep inflating the money, putting off the inevitable that you can't do this forever. And somewhere there is a finality, a finite number. And then you become Zimbabwe printing trillion-dollar bills that are worth 12 cents. So I don't know. It's a rough-looking deal to me. But I'm old guy, see? I don't, you know.
I got another little bit of trivia that's not pleasant. Our first national bank started in 1791. They crashed that in 1811. What happened in 1812?
They had the war with Britain.
Yeah.
Burned the capital.
The War of 1812, which ultimately led to the Star Spangled Banner, which we haven't even talked about, Francis Scott Key, which we could talk about for the entire time today. But the banks crashed in 1911. The second national bank started right after that war. And then Martin Van Buren tried to change it in the 1840s to be a free bank. And that lasted until 1863. What was happening in 1863?
The middle of the Civil War.
Yeah. And that restructuring of the bank lasted until 1913. In 1913, we created the Federal Reserve. What happened in 1914?
I think the war started in Europe, didn't it?
Correct. The guy, Ferdinand, what was his name? Archibald Ferdinand, the shot that started the war, 1914. Yeah. So every time you have a banking restructure, and we could just go through the 29s through 30s, the 80s, we restructured all of agriculture in 79. The banking system from an agricultural lending point went through a restructuring in 79. Look at what happened in the 80s. Every time that there's been a bank restructuring, what happens? It's not pretty.
Well, and guess what? If you'll remember, under Jimmy Carter, I know the fellas that got drunk on success, they went out in the spring and they contracted 20,000 calves weighing between 400 and 500 pounds. That fall, when they went to pick them up, they were over $1 a pound, and they had more money than they knew what to do with, and it broke both of them. But the same thing, we're having record dollars, not record profits, but record dollars in the livestock market right now, in the cattle. I mean, they're skyrocketing around here. I don't know. I assume back there.
Oh, yeah. Same thing.
And it was all a precursor of Yimmy. And he fell apart. And then Ronald Reagan came along and they handed it off to him. And it was just absolutely a live grenade. But he survived by cutting taxes, cutting regulations, doing all the things, and lived through it and was reelected by a 49 out of 50 states.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, there's just, yeah, resets come along. And
that's back when we had elections, not selections. I might add, we've successfully journeyed down the path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Hank Vogler, I'm Trent Luce, both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route.